Okay, here we are on CITR 101.9 FM. This is Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show, and a very extra special show today. First of all, thank you very much to the news team. Excellent work as per usual. We're here for an hour and a half live on the radio, only 1 hour on the internet today. We have the sports coming up at 7 o'clock if you're listening online, but from 6 till 7, here we are on Stranded. My name's Matt, and very extra special show because we have a live studio guest, a gentleman we've spoken to on the radio before over the phone, but this week we have Peter Foldy live in person. He is musician and filmmaker from Los Angeles, here visiting for a very special reason. And we're going to have him in the studio all day today, having a chat. Let's put him on first. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
I'm very good.
Well, good.
Thanks for coming in, listeners who may not have been listening for some time. Just a little fill-in. So, Peter is very well known for a hit song that came out in 1970 called Bondi Junction.
It was 73.
1973, which charted in Canada.
Yeah.
And we played this song before in the past, and we've sort of spoken about the origins of it. Did you want to fill us in again for new listeners about the origin of the song?
Well, it's called Bondi Junction. It's about a place in Sydney, Australia, as many Australians I'm sure will know, one of the most famous beaches in Australia. And I wrote the song while I was living in Toronto, and you know, I had the good fortune of getting a label deal with it, and the record came out and somehow clicked, and you know, went to number one on the RPM Adult Contemporary chart and got charted all across Canada. Got a couple of Juno nominations with it, and that led to a deal with Capital EMI, and then later with Polydor and RCA, where I had some other successful top 10 records, and eventually, you know, left the music business and started directing movies. But that's another story.
That's right. You are up here currently in Vancouver for just a week doing some production work.
Yeah, I'm working with a guy called Todd Fancy, who's a member of the indie band The New Pornographers, and he and I are writing some songs together, and I'm singing some backgrounds on his solo album, and that's been a lot of fun. You know, been working with him every day, and plus wanted to stick around and talk to you.
And it's been really great. We've kept in contact because Peter is the perfect example of somebody for this radio show because he has that Australian connection. And we've spoken in the past about the Bee Gees. So, Peter, you moved from Toronto.
No, from Hungary.
From Hungary, first of all.
To Australia.
To Australia.
So I am actually an Australian. I'm an Aussie without an accent. I used to have one of some kind of Aussie accent and lost it after I moved to Canada.
Now, it's funny because the Hungarian connection, I was just speaking with somebody, a professor from Regina, and he told me about what happened with the communist regime, and it was quite serious. He said there were tanks coming towards his university.
Yeah, there was a revolution in Hungary, and so we used the opportunity, this was in the 56, and we used the opportunity to escape because the borders weren't being guarded, and so it was like a movie. I mean, it was like a spy movie. We were in a truck surrounded by boxes of cigarettes, and the truck was hollow in the inside. We were sitting there, and we were stopped three times by Russian guards who might have shot us had they found us. But we got driven to the border and then walked across this border and ended up in Austria, and then applied to immigrate to a bunch of different countries. And Australia at that time was very open to having people come there because, you know, the population was low. And so Australia gave us a free passage on a ship, and we landed in Australia. And suddenly we were in this, you know, brand new place that was inconceivable to us, having come from a very European city like Budapest.
Yeah, absolutely. Incredible start to an interesting life. We'll talk a little bit more about what happened in Sydney there. I want to play some music straight up first,
though. Okay.
Like to give people some context, you did bring in some new music that you're working on.
Yeah, I'm recording a new album. You know, I've sort of discovered that I've been in the film business for quite a while, but I've discovered that people, you know, Bondi Junction still resonates with lots of people, and some of my old records do. I had a song called Roxanne that did very well across Canada, and so, you know, it's just I love doing music. It's fun and it's therapeutic, and so I'm recording a new album, and you know, it'll be ready hopefully soon.
And we'll try to get Bondi Junction up here, but before that, I think we'll play one of your newer songs because we do have those queued. So which track should we play first?
Why don't you play So Emotional, which is the one I just kind of finished recording. It's almost done, but it's, I think, good enough to listen to.
Great.
And it's called So Emotional.
This is the first time, I dare say, on radio in Canada.
First time ever anywhere.
Anywhere, wow.
So that's kind of fun.
So Emotional. This is by Peter Foley. He's a very special guest here on Stranded. And we'll be right back to talk more about the fascinating series of events that took place in Sydney in Peter's life. Na, 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 na. Fooling around on the down low. Met some women, we were partying down back at their condo. Then I realized that I'm a fool. 'Cause you mean everything. And I wanna say I'm sorry, but I can't tell you. You get too emotional. Swear that. Looks like you and I are through. That's what I get for hurting you. That's what I get for hurting you. Na na na. Na 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 na. Saw your friends and they were talking about me down in Soho. I heard them say that you were done with love. You're going so low. Promise you my wild oats have been sown. I will tell, but you won't listen when I wanna say I'm sorry. So I can't tell you. You get too emotional. Swear that I will always stay devotional. Seems like you and I are through. That's what I get for hurting. You don't know what losing you's gonna do to me. I see your door shut, but I'm not ready to walk away from destiny. I try to tell you, but you get too emotional. Swear that I will always stay devotional. Looks like you and I are through. Swear that I will always stay devotional. Looks like you and I are through. That's what I did for hurting you. Looks like you and I are through. All right, here we are back on CITR 101.9. Peter Foley, that is a brand new track that's not even fully mastered, mixed.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And so Peter Foley is our special guest live in the studio. We've had him speaking on the phone before, but he's up from LA. Specifically, he's helping to work on the record for Todd Fancy. He's a local musician.
From the New Pornographers.
New Pornographers. I'm excited to feature that new music because Peter, even in the last week, has helped with some songwriting. It's just the magic.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. Yeah.
We'll get into more of that later, but let's go back to Sydney. So Peter spent time in Sydney. He moved there from Hungary with his family, went to high school there. And Peter, how did you get involved in music?
Well, I've always had an interest in music, but on my first day of high school, I met a kid called Trevor Gordon who said he was a singer. And I thought, yeah, well, that's very interesting, very cool. And he went on to being a guest star on the Johnny O'Keefe Show, which was a very popular TV show at the time, and ended up getting a record deal. And he became sort of a little bit of a pop star in Australia. He, through his TV appearances, made friends with the Bee Gees, who were just a bunch of kids as well at the time, very up and coming, and you know, not super popular, but clearly incredibly talented, as was Trevor. And so hanging out with Trevor and the Bee Gees, you know, the young Gibb brothers, was amazingly inspiring, you know, to be in a room with them and see them picking up guitars and singing in this amazing harmony that, you know, they have. It would just kind of be, it was mind-blowing. Of course, I never dared say that I was a singer or wanted to be a singer. I wasn't a singer. I just wanted to be a singer. Secretly, it was like a secret ambition. So, but they were very inspiring, and just hearing and watching their career sort of develop and unfold with some of their records. But, you know, Trevor made some great records as well, and sadly, as I was telling you earlier, he passed away in the last few weeks. And very tragic, because he was my you know, first really best friend and oldest friend. You know, I've known him like a long, long time from first day of high school, and very sad about that. And you know, he was a great inspiration to me, and you know, he was a pioneer of Australian early rock and roll music, or early pop music. So yeah, it'd be nice to play something of his.
Absolutely, we've got a song queued up, because this is, I mean, any listeners to the show know that I myself am fascinated by history, and this is a bit of history I had no idea about, this Trevor Gordon. Fascinating, and the songs are incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he's from that era of Billy Thorpe and Little Paddy and you know, Ray Brown and the Whispers, and people in Australia who are of a certain age will remember those people. And Trevor was on TV a lot, you know, and, you know, singing all those early Aussie shows, and he used to sing duets with Little Paddy, so yeah.
And he went on to form the Marbles in the UK with his cousin.
Yeah, so what happened was, when the Bee Gees moved to London, they said to Trevor, come on over. And then he went over, and his cousin is a great singer, a guy called Graham Bonnet, and they formed the Marbles. And they had some hits in the UK. They had a big hit called Only One Woman.
We played that, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, yeah.
And you know, the Bee Gees, you know, produced them, and you know, they went on to some considerable success in the UK. This is way back in the day.
So, yeah, music fans, lovers, the Marbles, look them up. And a previous podcast, go to Google, type in Oz Stranded, and the blog will come up, and type in Marbles into the search. And we did a bit of a feature on them a couple of weeks back. But Trevor Gordon individually, as you say, your best friend, how about we play And I'll Be Happy?
That would be awesome.
It's
a great track, and this is the Bee Gees doing backgrounds. And
yeah, this is history.
And this came out, by the way, this is rare, because it came out as Trevor Gordon and the Bee Gees.
Wow.
That's how it was built, and that's what it says on the record. You can find it on YouTube.
And this song blew me away. This is quality. This is from a different time, people. Amazing music. Trevor Gordon with the song I'll Be Happy. As a tribute, he'd recently passed away, and he was a good friend of Peter Foley, who was in the studio today. So we'll be right back with Peter. This is Trevor Gordon and a song called I'll Be Happy.
I'm such a lonely boy, looking for someone to love. And when I find someone to love, I'll be happy. You are such a lovely girl, looking for a lonely boy. So won't you fill this heart with joy? I'd like to give my heart a chance for romance for two. I'd like to give my heart away. Let me stay by you. And then I'll be a happy boy, and I'll have someone to care. And all my love is everywhere. I'll be happy too. my heart a chance for romance for two. I'd like to give my heart away. Let me stay by you. And then I'll be a happy boy, 'cause I'll have someone to care.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola. No marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Refreshing indeed. That's what we try to do on this radio station, is feature music that you would never otherwise hear. And today we're having a wonderful history lesson. We have live in the studio Peter Foldy. He is a resident of Los Angeles, but has deep connections with Canada and Australia, as he had a music career based out of Toronto for some time, but began his musical journey in Sydney, Australia, where he fortuitously got to know the Bee Gees as personal friends when they were first starting out, and also that gentleman who we just played, Trevor Gordon, beautiful song, I'll Be Happy, and 1963?
65,
60,
I would say, yeah.
65.
Yeah.
So, chronology-wise, so the Bee Gees... I mean, let's face it, everyone knows them. They were mega superstars in the disco era, but they began as a trio of artistic.
Yeah, I showed you a clip earlier, you know, and they were like kind of an adult novelty act. I mean, they played adult songs or novelty songs in adult nightclubs as like young kids, as 13, 14-year-old kids. They weren't a rock band. They were just like cabaret entertainers at first, and you know, they would go on these TV shows and do cabaret type songs, like the clip I showed you from YouTube, My Old Man's a Dustman, the old Lonnie Donegan hit, and you know, that's the kind of stuff they did. And it was only when they were hitting their teens that they started writing what was in pop rock music or pop music, and you know, developing from there. But they really, as I said, I think on the last time I was on your show, they really didn't get a lot of respect in Australia, because you know, they were kind of dorky, and they were funny looking, and they were, you know, wore these funny checkered vests, and, you know, they weren't a rock band, you know, but, you know, by the time they left Australia, their record, Spicks and Specks, was going to number one, and they landed in England, got signed by Brian Epstein, who was, Robert Stigwood, who had worked for Brian Epstein, the Beatles manager, and, you know, and the rest is really history, so...
Absolutely, and that's right. Those formative years in Australia, playing pubs and bars, doing what they were, and they were so refined. And so Peter, who went on to build a really great career for himself, was very clearly influenced by what he absorbed, and purely empathically, because you weren't mentored. That's what I find interesting. It's not like you're mentored specifically.
I was actually discouraged. You know, I was discouraged because. Because seeing them was like, holy God, I can't say I'm a singer when I'm in the same room as these people. They're brilliant. You know, they had this amazing, they just had this inherent talent, you know. So that really sort of held me back. And also, you know, saying that, hey, I want to be a singer, that's kind of silly, you know. People laugh at you when you're first starting out, or when you have those dreams. Nobody really wants to encourage that. They say go to school and get an education. And it was just really sort of Bondi Junction was just incredibly a lucky. The song was a very commercial, good, catchy song, but it was a very lucky break that I got to get that thing noticed and get a record made and get it on the charts and everything. So, you know, that's just the way life happens.
That's right. And so let's get to that song now, actually. So Bondi Junction is based on a real incident in your life as
that's
a young
right.
person in Sydney.
That's right.
Bondi Beach, one of the world's most famous beaches And it's about a girl.
Yeah, it's you know, I've told the story before, but it's I used to get the bus in Bondi Junction to my high school, and the boys I went to in those days, it was segregated boys' schools and girls' schools, and so the bus would pass this bunch of schoolgirls, and there was this really pretty blonde girl, and I threw out a note saying, "Meet me in Bondi Junction on Saturday in front of the Metro Cinema." And, you know, so she showed up. And, you know, the next day I went there thinking I'm an idiot. She's never going to show. But she did show up. And we went to the movies and held hands and stuff. And many years later, it kind of inspired the song.
And we're going to play some of it now. We did in our previous interview with Peter last year, we played the song. We spoke about it at length. I'll tell you about that podcast soon. But let's play a bit of it again for a reminder of... When Peter Foley got his big break in music, this was 1973, a Canadian hit song, based on an experience in Sydney, and it's a beautiful song. Let's play it, and we'll be right back. This is CITR Radio.
I was young, she was fair, and I knew when I first saw her, she would take me there. She was fine, said hello, and she smiled, and she told me what her name was, and I told her mine, a hopeful sign. And we met in Bondi Junction, that is where I first found love. Took her home, I was scared, didn't want her parents coming home to find us there in the dark. Later on, she made tea, and I thought that I would want her till eternity. But I was wrong, and we met in Bondi Junction. That is where I first found love.
And we're back here on CITR Radio 101.9 FM. Also, you might be listening online, www.citr.ca. And the podcast of this show will be up shortly. Go to Google and type in Oz Stranded and you'll find the blog there with tasty goodness, podcasts, set lists, links. Send me an email anytime to chat about what you'd like to hear or just to say hi. So that was the classic. Bondi Junction, 1973,
yep.
Canadian track. That's CanCon, written by Peter Foley, based on a real experience he had as a young person in Bondi Beach, Australia. He's sitting here in the studio with me. And so let's go back to that time. We spoke about Peter being personal friends with the Bee Gees. So we all know about the Stayin' Alive era, the disco stuff, but they started out as a three-piece band playing pop songs in Australia, battling it out, struggling. And Peter got to know them and was influenced by them. So what do you want to let us know a little bit more about that and what music you of the Bee Gees you like?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, they started, you know, doing cabaret kind of stuff. But when they started doing pop records, they one of their early really good records that I thought was, you know, just kind of knocked me out was a song called Wine and Women. I remember them actually playing it live in their house, you know, going, and I thought, wow, that's a really good song. Mm. And then they recorded it, and in those days, it was very hard to get noticed, you know, on, on the radio, and especially for them. They had a real struggle, and their father went out and you know, like, they used to go around at night plastering, like posters on construction sites, the Bee Gees, Wine and Women. Oh. And they'd go to the stores, their parents would go to the stores and buy 50 records and 100 records just to try and get radio stations to notice it. But Wine and Women is, I think, their first really great pop record that you know, got them really noticed as a rock band, as a pop band in Australia. So, yeah, and Trevor Gordon, who we talked about earlier, played lead guitar on that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, the Bee Gees played Vice Versa on his single.
Yeah, they wrote a lot of Trevor. They wrote all of Trevor's music.
Yeah.
In those days, Trevor wasn't writing. Barry was, you know, Barry and Robin, I guess, were the, you know, the songwriters. And they, you know, all of Trevor's records were written by the Bee Gees, the one you heard, and the other ones that he did.
So this is real cool. We're going to play this. We've got it queued up. This is the Bee Gees, Wine and Women, 1965. So this is pre-UK, and then the explosion happened for them. Imagine that amazing time, going to the UK in the mid-60s, the Beatles, the whole thing was happening. They were at ground zero. But before that, they were in Australia starting out. And let's play Wine and Women from 1965, as recommended by Peter Foldy, who is here in the studio.
Thank you. Despite the fact that 8 in 10 Canadians are against warrantless and costly online spying, the government remains stubborn, set to cement this scheme into law. With their huge PR budget, they've unleashed a reckless and irresponsible campaign that suggests warrantless collection of our private data is on par with a phone book. We can't let them trick Canadians. Go to www.openmedia.ca now to find out what you can do to get involved and stop this smoke and mirrors campaign the government has started.
We're live on CITR Radio. This is Friday night in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and it should be around 1:30 in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, if you're listening, or you could be anywhere in the world online, www.citr.ca. This is Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show, and a throwback there to a great track by the Bee Gees, Wine and Women from 1965. You know, like, even I have a Best of Bee Gees at Home CD, and it's like there's nothing of this era. You know, it's like it's great to discover this. Thanks to Peter Foley.
Well, there's an album called Rare, Precious, and Beautiful, I think it's called, which has a bunch of old Bee Gees, a lot of the stuff on it. And there's also another one called Assaulting the Vaults or something, where they play a lot of the rare Bee Gees stuff. And Trevor Gordon stuff is on there too. So.
Ah, right.
Yeah, okay. So it's out there if you do the research.
Yep, that's right. And I'm sure that I've piqued the curiosity of some great music lovers out there. This is a very special show. Peter Foley is in the studio. He is currently makes his living as a filmmaker. We'll talk a little bit about that. Did you want to talk about your film work? What you do?
I've directed a bunch of movies, a bunch of feature films, and some television stuff. When I was in L.A. and the music thing was kind of winding down, I had the good fortune to sell a script that got made and was a successful teen movie. And that led to selling more scripts. And eventually I thought, I really want to direct, just like everybody says that these days. But, I was fortunate enough to, again, like with Bondi Junction, have a lucky break and meet the right people and have the right project at the right time. Started directing films, and, I've made some films for HBO and Showtime, which are the big networks in the States. Did a film with Beverly D'Angelo, who was one of my background singers here in Canada when I was making records for Capital EMI. The film business has gotten a lot tougher, just like the music business, because everybody is doing it, and it's kind of diluted it, and also the money in the last few years has dried up, so for independent films especially. But I think it's getting a lot better now. And I love making films. It's a great... it's like each film you make is like going to war. It's a real battle to get it from beginning to end. But it's a great challenge, and I'm happy that I've been able to accomplish that as well as make some records. So
yeah,
And
moving to LA at that time. So for the Peter Foley chronology, we're jumping back and forth a little bit. But,
not really,
but
because I left Australia, around the time the Bee Gees and Trevor did and everything. I just went to Canada. I came to Toronto, and I went to film school, actually. That's how my interest in film started. I went to York University in Toronto. Went to film school, but I was playing in bands at night. And, in the basement of the film school, there was a sound, where people recorded sound, and I started cutting demos of songs I had written, including Bondi Junction. And so going to film school is how I got my demos made, and then eventually it all came full circle when I found myself in L.A. I thought, wow, this is the land of film, and I started writing scripts and,
And was it nerve-wracking for you when you did first get there? Because I guess the plan was there was a record company that was trying to get set something up for you in L.A. that didn't quite turn out.
Yeah. Just to give you the history of my recording career, I was signed to a small label called Kanata Records, which is distributed by Quality Records. They had another artist that's quite well-known called Ray Materic, who's a sort of a well-known Canadian act from that era. And then I went from that label after I did Bondi Junction and an album for them. I got signed by EMI, Capital EMI in Canada. But in those days, Capital EMI's records were only being released in Canada. Like, it wasn't like you were on Capital or EMI all across the board. So EMI in the States were only, releasing Anne Murray. She was the only Canadian act that was being released in the States. So my management got me a deal with Polydor in the States, And then I was on Capitol for 3 years. I came down to the States, and I got signed by a label called RCA Free Flight, which was a subdivision of RCA Records. And that was promising to be a really lucrative deal. In those days you'd get a nice advance if you signed with a label and stuff. And they were spending money on making some records. And I did a record called Love City that, I love the sound of. I did it in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and did a record called School of Love. In those days, people were making singles. You'd make a bunch of singles, and if you hit with one, then you'd make an album. School of Love, I had the lead singer of the band Player, that song, Baby Come Back, Baby Come Back. So he sang backgrounds for me, along with a friend of mine, Stephen Kipner. And, that was promising to be a great, big kickstart in the U.S. marketplace when suddenly RCA shut the label down. They just pulled the plug on it. It was like, when was it? I'm blanking now. It was in the early 80s. And it's kind of when the record business started imploding a little bit. A bunch of labels shut down. And suddenly I didn't have a label. I didn't have a major label. I didn't have any label. And so I didn't know what to do. I went back to Canada and toured for a while and played some clubs and things, living off the sort of milking my past successes there. But eventually I went back to LA and started writing scripts and was lucky enough to sell one, and that led to more and then eventually to directing.
And I actually wanted to bring that up, but the very first one, Hot Moves.
Yeah.
Was that, like, historically for film buffs, was that the first kind of teen sex comedy?
Oh, I don't think so.
Ever?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there was Porky's and Ski School, and there was a bunch of them. But it was definitely, it was one of the early pioneers of that genre. And, it was a very successful film. I was just a writer on it. And, I was an associate producer. I forgot. I was an associate producer and a co-writer of that script. And But the movie made a lot of money. It made about $10 million.
Wow.
Played theatrically, and it was a big title on VHS, because VHS was just starting to explode and people were looking to fill the shelves with product. And that was, sex sells. And it was a silly movie, really was. But I have fond memories of being on that set.
Hot Moves.
As you can imagine.
And then many years later was the American Pie phenomenon, similar genre. And Eugene Levy was in that, and he was one of the stars of one of the more known,
one of my recent films. I did a film called Silver Man here in Toronto, and that starred Eugene Levy and Joe Pantoliano and Daniel Baldwin. It was kind of a cool, arty indie film that unfortunately didn't get the distribution that we had hoped it would get, but it won a bunch of festivals and it played all over the world and played in some good festivals. And I would fly around to places like Portugal and England and, do Q&As after the movie. So it's, when a movie's, working, it's fun to go out and support it. And, it's amazing the people you meet and the experiences you have doing that stuff.
So. Totally. So for more information about Peter's film career, peterfoldy.com. Of course, IMBD information there as well. But peterfoldy.com has got everything, the music and the films.
Soon to be rebuilt. peterfoldy.com.
Yeah. As I think we were talking on the bus, my blog too needs a little bit more interactivity happening. It's a new world. It's exciting. This show's exciting, and it's great to have Peter here. We'll be right back to talk a little bit more, just a public service announcement here. We'll get into some more music as well, because Peter is reviving his solo music career. So we'll be right back on CITR Radio.
Catch Natalie McMaster April 2nd when her familiar sound of the East Coast fills every corner of North Vancouver's Centennial Theatre. Don't miss Natalie McMaster live. For tickets, call 604-984-4484 or visit centennialtheatre.com. Tickets are now on sale.
This is CITR Radio, broadcasting from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and anywhere where you may be listening online on www.citr.ca. We're here online for another 20 minutes and the sports broadcast kicks in, but we'll be still live on the radio if you're listening live, if that makes any sense, on the dial. This time of year we have sports that does regularly play this time of year. Anyway, we've still got plenty of time with Peter Foldy. We've just been speaking about his career in film, but he's still recording songs. And there's an album due to be released in 2013.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, you can never tell. And we have some songs here actually queued up. And we played one before, and I'd like to play another one again. What could you tell me, Peter, about where you're at with music these days?
Well, you know, I've never stopped writing music and producing music. I've also music supervised 3 feature films, so I've always kept my hand in music, even though I was, you know, writing and directing films. Mm. You know, I love music, and, you know, as I may have said before, you know, with the internet, and I had an album released in about 2006, 2007, The Best of Peter Foldy, that had all my old tracks on it, and that kind of brought a bunch of people around to say, hey, I like your record, or I remember Bondi Junction. I realized that there's people out there, you know, in the past you had no way of knowing who was listening to your stuff, but now with the internet, people can friend you on Facebook or tweet or whatever. Mm. And so I found out there are people who still like the stuff and think of my old tracks, you know, fondly or not, but, you know, there are people who remember it. So I just thought this would be a great time to record some new music, and so that's what I've been working on. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's very therapeutic to be in the studio. I love it. It's like kind of going home.
Yeah. And as we mentioned earlier, that Peter has a clear influence from the Bee Gees because he knew them growing up, and it's the melodies and the care and the vocals, I think, that you've retained.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, everybody has their influences, and they were certainly one of mine. I mean, there were other people who influenced me, you know, and I'm trying to be a little bit more diverse on this new album. You know, my early stuff was very pop because that's the genre I liked and I fell into, you know. You know, what I think I was telling you before, you know, in those days in Canada, a lot of people were kind of folky sounding. You know, there was the Gordon Lightfoots and the Dan Hills and people like that. And then there was the heavier rock bands like Bachman Turner. And I was doing this kind of pop music that sounded like it came from England or came from America. So I found a kind of niche, and I enjoy it. And, you know, it led to, fortunately, to some success. But, you know, the album is a little bit more diverse, so.
Well, we're going to play some another track now that Peter's recorded recently. So which one were we... Something Happened?
Yeah, play that.
Something
sure.
Happened?
Something Happened.
Okay, so...
Something Happened. I came to visit you in Vancouver.
That's right. And we'll tell you, too, what the specific reason for that, too, which is kind of interesting. But let's get into this song, too. This is Peter Foley, brand new track called Something Happened.
And these are all unmixed, by the way.
All unmixed, yeah.
But just... they're good enough to play, so I figured why not.
For an upcoming album, Peter is visiting from LA. We'll be right back to chat some more with Peter. Here we go.
Knew you back in high school. We were friends. Last night and walked you to your door. It's true. Thinking about you. I hope that you are digging into something about the way you move, the way you said hello. It's been over 20 years and you still have that glow. It's true. About you, I hope that you are digging me too. Maybe I'm delusional, I don't know what to do. Something happened and I can't stop thinking about you.
the scope of my demand. Craving for affection, the need to hold your hand. I do, baby, I do. I'm thinking about you.
Something happened.
Thinking about you. I hope that you are digging into. Maybe I'm delusional. I don't know what to do. Something happened and I can't stop thinking about you.
Right, so that's another song by Peter Foldy, brand new song, not even fully mastered yet, and it'll be on a new record coming out hopefully this year. Peter Foldy is in the studio. He's visiting from Los Angeles, and it's been a real pleasure to have him because, well, for many reasons, he's a great person, and also his knowledge of Australian music because of the time he spent there as a young person, getting to know the Bee Gees, and continuing to make great music over the last couple of decades. So this year, how close are you to the
record? I've got one more song to record when I get back. I've got one more song. The song's written, and hopefully it'll be cut, and then, you know, then there's the process of mastering, of mixing and mastering and all that stuff. It always takes a lot longer than you think, you know. So I'm just working away at it, you know, working away a few days a week, getting the album done, but it is a lot of fun.
And we're talking on the bus about the process of songwriting. Can you comment on that for you over the years, how you go about it, the craft as opposed to the art or the emotional resonance of an experience?
Well, I generally, something just inspires, you know, for me to pick up the guitar and just start playing some melodies or some line or some line of lyric, you know, something that kickstarts the whole thing, and then I don't know, I don't even know how it happens. It just kind of, sometimes songs are just born and they write themselves. Like the ones that work generally tend to write themselves. They kind of go to places and chords that, you know, just feel organic, you know. And then sometimes you just struggle like crazy, you know. And I've tossed loads of songs away that just I don't think work at all, but you know, hard to say.
Yeah, totally.
It's hard to describe where art comes from.
It always is. Whatever. Yeah, I could ask everyone who comes in the studio, and everyone's going to give a different answer, and this is the way it is. That's the magic.
Yeah, something inspires it, and something that you already know how to do combines with that inspiration. Like I know how to play guitar and piano, so that knowledge of certain chords and you know, melodies and stuff, you know, combined with the inspiration creates songs for me.
It's so interesting to think about influences, and I've been fortunate enough to Peter's taken the time to teach me actually the chords to Bondi Junction, his song that he's most well known for, and it's been wonderful for me as a beginner guitarist a year in, starting to write songs. that experience may influence me. Who knows? Because it's the most melodic song that I've learned, you know, on guitar, and the chords were different for me, and it was a good experience. And
it's a challenge.
It's a challenge, and especially I got to say, to get up at an open mic. My goodness, that's what I did last Monday at a pub on Main Street, Mr. Brownstone's. I got through 3/4 of Bondi Junction. I told people the story.
What, did you stop playing it 3/4
well,
of the
way? Well, no, it's just the outro. I hadn't quite nailed that yet.
Gotcha.
So I got...
Keep practicing.
I did last night on my work break, so...
There you go.
So Mr. Brownstone's pub, I should actually plug it. There's a good open mic there that's on Main Street. Look it up on Google. I'm going to force myself back there as often as I can. And music's wonderful. It's life transformative. And Peter has been great. It's been great to chat with you. And... I mean, let's bring it right back to the present. And you were actually invited up here by a local musician. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how that came about and who we're talking about?
Yeah, well, it's a guy called Todd Fancy, who's in the band called New Pornographers. And I got an email from him. The subject was Todd from the New Pornographers, and I was aware of the band. And I thought, oh, okay, what's this? And he said that, you know, he was a fan of my music and he had discovered it, and he said it would be an honor if I came up and sang on his album. And I thought, oh, what's this? You know, it's kind of weird. You know, I don't know who this person is. You know, I thought it was a joke at first, you know. And so I kind of researched it, and then he and I started talking. And cool guy, you know, had some really nice songs that he sent me that I really liked and felt I could contribute something. So I came up here in October, and I did some background singing for him, just to, you know, he just wanted some different textures and different voices on his album, which is, you know, it's a good thing to do. And ended up sort of helping with some creative input in terms of writing. So now I've got some writing credit on some of his tunes. But, you know, he's just working away on a solo album, and he's, you know, it's some great stuff that I think his fans, and he's got loads of fans, you know, he's through the New Pornographers, I think, going to really like. And I'm just happy to be, you know, have had a small part in it and, you know, brought me up here. And it's all good.
And it's really cool that throughout your career that you have had these opportunities to collaborate. Yeah, I mean, you learn every time you learn something, you contribute.
Oh, yeah.
It just creates good energy.
Well, everything influences you, you know.
Yeah.
Like you could get influenced by anything, you know. Just, you know, who knows where that comes from. But yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I'm lucky that I've had some, you know, I've been in the right place at the right time to a certain degree, you know. That's what it is, partially. You know, it's, if you want to, I always say, if you want to get hit by a car, you got to go play in traffic, you know. So sometimes you get hit by a car, you know?
Especially in LA.
In a good way, yeah. LA's got lots of cars.
Well, we still have... So in terms of online listeners, you have another 5 minutes to hear what we're talking about and playing. So last time for one more song.
Yeah, why don't you play Philadelphia on My Mind.
Which
is kind of something a little bit different for me in terms of the tone of the song. You know, it's not quite as poppy, and it was influenced by a friend of mine who's from Philadelphia and is going through some problems and stuff, and it inspired the song. I kind of like it.
Okay, so this is Philadelphia on My Mind, another brand new song by Peter Foldy. He is here in the studios chatting with us, visiting from Los Angeles. Brand new music. This is Peter Foldy, Philadelphia on My Mind.
Wish that I could understand the reason you cry. Wish that I could wash away pain you feel inside. Why can't you talk about it? Seems you're not inclined. I'm just trying to help you. You've got Philadelphia on your mind. Maybe I could guide you on the path where you belong. Maybe if you take my hand, I'll help you to be strong. So sit back and take it easy. It's okay to to unwind. I'm just trying to help you. You've got Philadelphia on your mind. Anywhere that you go, I will be there to help you. In a crazy world where truth is hard to find, complicated situations are better left behind. Come on, let's talk about it. It's okay to unwind. I'm just trying to help you. You've got Philadelphia on your mind. Come on, let's talk about it. It's okay to unwind. I'm just trying to help you. Got Philadelphia on your mind. Anywhere that you go, I will be there to help you understand. Anytime that you're down, I will be there to hold your hand. We're living in a crazy world where truth is hard to find. Complicated situations are better left behind. Come on, let's talk about it. It's okay to unwind. I'm just trying to help you. You've got Philadelphia on your mind. Got Philadelphia on your mind.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots global unembedded international independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
We're back here on Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show, CITR Radio 101.9 FM. And so it's 7 o'clock, and we're just going to sign off. For anyone listening online, we have a sports broadcast happening that'll be kicking in any moment, which periodically happens this time of year. But we're still going to be live on the dial 101.9 FM. So any international listeners, if it fades out now, that's the reason. But you can hear the whole show, including the next half hour, online at the podcast, which will be up hopefully in the next couple of days. Go to Google and type in Oz Stranded. Oh, actually, I did just get a URL now. It's ozstrandedradio.com. There you go. That's a lot easier now. With podcast set lists. So, Peter Foldy, thanks. That was the Philadelphia on My Mind, which is a track that will be on his upcoming release out this year. And Peter Foldy is a special guest in the studio. He is a Los Angeles-based filmmaker and musician, and he is up here working with Todd Fancy of the New Pornographers on his solo record. So, Peter, let's talk about movies again. So, could you tell us a little bit, go deeper, I guess, into how you got into movies and what you learnt maybe when you first started?
Okay, well, you know, like I said, I studied film in university, York University in Toronto, and when I found myself in L.A., I just realized it was a place where, you know, I could pursue film a lot more vigorously, and a lot of things happened fortuitously, basically. I met somebody who was producing short films, and I worked on that guy's short films. I was like a co-producer for a couple of those, and then I finally said, "Look, I want to direct something," and I wrote he was making like educational short films. So I wrote a short film. It was called Jamie's Secret, and this guy was making them for the high school. They were conversation starters. So he had films about things that would, you know, they could play in high schools that were conversation starters. So I wrote one on child molestation. That was the first one I wrote, called Jamie's Secret, and auditioned a bunch of actors. One of the first actors we hired for that film was a guy called Paul Rudd, who you now know from Paul Rudd World. You know, Paul Rudd, the very famous actor.
Oh.
So that was his first movie that I directed him in. And then we realized he was a really talented guy, so we wrote another one that he was in, which I can't remember the title, but that one was about cheating in high school. These are like 22-minute short films. So I just felt very comfortable directing. I don't know why or how. Well, I did study film, but I don't know. It just felt right, and it was working. And Jamie's Secret came out and won a bunch of things. I won Best Director and Best Film, won Best Film or something at some festivals, and it was cool. It was very gratifying. And I realized I wanted to do a feature, and I wrote something that was very commercial. What in those days was a low budget concept, which was like a little actiony lower budget film. And I met somebody that worked for a company that made those kind of films, and I took the film in, took the script in, and I had the good fortune of having the president of the company, a guy called Menachem Golan, who was an Israeli crazy producer, but very prolific, made loads and loads of films and gave people their first chance. And he walked in the office while I was meeting this other guy, and he said, "What's this?" And I told him what the film was. And he said, I love this. We'll make it." And I went, "You will?" And he goes, "Who's directing?" I said, "Me." And he goes, "What have you directed?" I said, "Nothing." He goes, "Okay." You know, so suddenly I went, "Oh, my God, maybe I'm going to get to direct a film." And miracle of miracles, the film about a year later did get set up. And it was a great experience. You know, we had a guy called Jan Michael Vincent was in it. This is the early 90s, 93. Jan Michael Vincent from the show Airwolf and tons of movies. And the guy called Maxwell Caulfield, who was in the movie Grease 2, was in it. And it was shot in 35 millimeter. I'm really proud of it because the budget was extremely low. It was like $325,000, but the film looks, for that time, it was very low because everything was shot on 35 millimeter film. It wasn't like now, you know, you can shoot it digitally. And so I finished that film, and Menachem Golan, the guy who owned the company, had me around for another 6 months to come up with more concepts, and then he went bankrupt. You know, so damn, another company going bankrupt on me. And I called somebody. I was looking for somebody, and I called a number, and it turned out to be the wrong number. And I said, "I'm sorry to have bothered you." And I said, what do you guys do there?" And she goes, "Well, we make movies." And I went, "Oh, really?" I said, "I've just finished directing my first film." And she goes, "Well, good for you, dear." And was about to hang up on me. I said, "Well, wait a minute. Are you looking for any projects? Because I've got some new scripts." And she goes, "No, we only make Canadian movies." I go, "Well, I'm Canadian." Yeah. She goes, "Oh, well, what do you have?" And I gave her a pitch on the phone. And she said, "Come in tomorrow." And that film got made about a year later. Because it takes about that long to, you know, raise the money. So, again, if you want to get hit by a car, you got to go play in traffic, you know, right place at the right time. Call a wrong number and got a second movie made.
That's
know it's crazy, but it's absolutely true. And I'm still friends with that woman. Her name is Jacqueline Giroux. She's a producer who lives in L.A. And then somebody saw that film and offered me a movie for a world premiere for HBO, which now was a $3 million picture. So it was like a big jump up from $325,000 to $3 million. And that was a film with Beverly D'Angelo and Bruce Davidson and a guy called Dennis Haysbert, who's the black actor who does all those car insurance commercials. Maybe they don't have them here, but he's a very well-known actor. And that was a fun picture. And went on from there. I did a film after that in Toronto with Peter Coyote called Seeds of Doubt and then eventually Silver Man.
It just goes to show, like, be optimistic, and being optimistic in life is worth it because...
Yeah, just put it out there. What have you got to lose?
Yeah.
They can say, you know, they can hang up on you and say, you know, "Thanks for calling my wrong number. Don't call back again," you know.
Yeah.
But also it was just like, I don't know, something made me ask what they did, you know. And she said, "We make movies." And go figure.
That's so interesting. This is Peter Foldy talking about his film career. I've always been curious too, just generally, like life in Los Angeles. You know, we get you get a lot of the stereotypes. Like people say, oh, it's so busy and it's full of people.
Well, you've been there.
Yeah, I have been. And it is. It's hectic. And what... It's been your base for quite a long time.
And, you know what? Honestly, I'm actually back and forth. I come to Toronto a fair bit, you know, to see family. So, yeah, I spend time down there because that's where the work is. You know, like if you want to push a project forward, you know, it really helps. But interestingly, being a Canadian helps me get projects set up because they buy them down there, but they want to make them up here for the tax credits. So because it's Canadian content, because I'm a Canadian writer-director, they get, you know, what do you call it, tax rebates, which is a very important element to getting films made.
Yeah.
Because it means that a third or 30% or 40% of your money is basically a gift from the government in the form of tax credits.
And that's why they call Vancouver Hollywood North. A lot of films get made here. Of course, the X-Files series, that's what the city is famous for.
But in those days, there was an exchange rate. So you would have one American dollar and you'd get $1.50 Canadian for it. So if you had a $10 million film, it would turn into $15 million because of the exchange rate. So that was the other reason, you know. So Canada, you know, Canada basically invented this brilliant tax credit system in a way that everybody in the world is doing now. You know, but it's a great place to make movies and great crews up here in Vancouver.
And how about the current challenges in the current economic climate? Is it true that it seems like there's either, like, it's harder for people starting out because you've got these huge big budget films that are, like, you know, not many people, or very, very low budget student films, and to get that in between?
Yeah, the in-between business has kind of disappeared, and that's the business, unfortunately, I was in, the $2-3 million budget range, and those budgets are hard to get. So now you're looking at either trying to get into the studio system, which is $50 million and up, and that is like getting into an exclusive country club. It's very, very hard. Or you scramble and try and find low money and try and make a film, you know, finance it through independent financing. But the problem is that they expect you to have big stars even if your budget is small, because you can't sell a film without names in it. I did a short film, and because I had a good idea for a short film, and it was called Head, Heart, and Balls. Head, Heart, and Balls are why I stopped smoking, why I gave up smoking pot. That was the title of it. And I got a star, a sort of a known name for that, a guy called Adam Carolla, who's a, you know, radio personality. He took over for Howard Stern on radio in the States. And so even for like a $5,000 short film, you know, I wanted to put a name in it, because everyone has a short film. So how is yours going to get noticed if it doesn't have a name in it? And that's the challenge. How do you get a name? But there is a way, and that's a whole other conversation and lesson in financing. There is a way. It's always hard, but can be. First of all, have a great script. Have something that actors want to be in. You know, and that's the start of it, you know. So much for the film. But right now I'm actually developing a Broadway musical. I don't know if I told you about that. I didn't tell you about that. I found a story on the internet randomly, and I got the movie rights for it. And it's a story of the first guys signed to the Beatles company Apple in 1967 after they met Paul McCartney in the park randomly. And it's a true story, and it's kind of a Cinderella story, and I've developed it into a film script and into a play, and I've been demoing songs for that because I've written a lot of the music for it as well, and I've got some pretty serious producing people looking at it right now. So, you know, it's just, it's so great to be able to sort of just pursue a life of creativity. I'm very fortunate to be able to do that, and you know, have it all sort of work some of the time. You know, and then struggle some of the other times. But the struggle is part of the fun. Because, you know, the road getting there and the road there is just as much fun as being there.
The learning and inspiring others along the way, which you've done for myself.
Thanks, man.
We'll be right back. We just got a promo for, speaking of inspiring, I'm going to shout out to Chris Arific for the radio show Parts Unknown, who I'm going to play his promo now. He's been a great inspiration for me. He was the very first person I spoke to here in the CITR radio studios. And he's been such a gracious guy, really positive and enthusiastic. He lives a few doors down from me. Chris, thanks for everything. You've been inspiring for me, so I'm going to play your promo now. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Does anybody know where he's from?
From parts unknown.
My name's Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is without question the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it. Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Parts Unknown!
Break your fingers!
From you, I got no one to blame but myself.
I got no one to blame.
I should have seen it coming, baby. But when I met you, I fell.
I was crazy when I fell.
A pretty face can always come along and fool me. I'm only human. A friendly smile will sometimes do me. But lately all I feel is rejection from you. I think I'm ready to say it's over and done. I'm not willing to play this crazy little game that you've begun. Guess it's time now. Staying, baby, even wondering why.
There's no point in wondering why.
Life's too short to put up with the crap you give me. It's a trap when you say, baby, please forgive me. I'm saying no to rejection from you. I think I'm ready to say it's over and done.
I got no one to blame.
I should have seen it coming, baby. But when I met you, I thought
I was crazy when I fell.
Life's too short to put up with the crap you give me. It's a trap when you say, baby, please forgive me. I'm saying no to rejection from you. Rejection from you. Rejection from you.
$1 billion on the ground, all stretched out and uncurled. Would extend about four times around the circumference of the world.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Commercial Drive area at
Bone Rattle Music Limited, High Life Records, and People's Co-op Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or online at citr.ca.
This is CITR Radio, 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada. And the Stranded website is www.ozstrandedradio.com. Check it out. Over 100 podcasts. I put up a set list each week and a video clip. And we're on Twitter at OzStranded. And each week, every Friday, we broadcast Australian and Canadian independent music and dig into the archives of the past. And we just heard there another track from Peter Foldy called Rejection From You. Another example of what you would hear on a record that will be out hopefully this year. And there is a best of too that came out in 2007. Peter, what's
It's called Peter Foldy, Bondi Junction and Other Hits.
Yeah, and available probably on Amazon and off through your website.
Oh, yeah, it's yeah. Everywhere.
Pretty easy to find.
Oh, it's on iTunes and CD yeah. Baby and Amazon. Everywhere.
Yeah. And so Peter, just 5 minutes or so back, was talking about his latest project, which is a musical based on, let me get this right, the band that was signed to the Beatles record label through a chance meeting with Paul McCartney.
Exactly. You summed that up. That's perfectly. The story is, it's kind of a Cinderella story. These kids go to London in 1967 for the weekend, and they discover where McCartney lives, and they park the car outside, and suddenly the gates open up and he comes driving out. So they chase him, they follow him in their car, and he's walking his dog in Hyde Park. The dog was Martha, if you remember that song, Martha, my dear. You know. Mm-hmm. So he's walking Martha. Oh. And so they go up to him and say, "Hey, Paul, you know, look, hello, you know, we're from Liverpool too," and blah, 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 you know, and all this stuff. And so Paul's a little pissed off at first, and they say, "Look, you know, we're songwriters. Can you help us?" And he goes, "Yeah, I could, but why should I? You just chase me all over London, you know." And they go, "Because we're really good. You know, we're really good." And Paul says, "All right, I'll tell you what, call this guy and tell him I said." So they go to the phone booth and they call up this number, and this guy says, "Oh, Paul McCartney said to call. Come on over." So they go to this empty office. There's just a desk in there, and there's a piece of paper stuck to the door. It says Apple. It's like the early, early days of Apple. Mm. And so they go in and play some songs, and the guy takes them down to a demo studio. This is a true story. And they demo some songs, just guitar, voice. Mm. And the guy says, "Well, before you guys go back to Liverpool, I'll buy you a beer. Wait for me in the pub." And while the boys are in the pub, John Lennon drops in, and he hears the demos. Huh. And he calls Brian Epstein on the telephone and plays him over the phone. So Epstein says, "I want to meet these guys." And so, you know, the guys can't believe their luck. They go back to Liverpool wait for the meeting with Brian Epstein, but Brian Epstein dies 2 weeks later.
Wow.
And, you know, and the original guy who heard them play, whose name was Terry Doran, he brings them back 6 months later, signs them as songwriters on Apple. They end up living at John Lennon's house and hanging out with, you know, with the Beatles and the Stones and everybody else. And, you know, and that's this crazy story. So there you have it. Okay. And yeah, so I found this the story online and wrote to the guy and said, "Wow, what a great story. You should write a book." And I convinced him to, you know, he and I became friends over the internet. And he ended up writing a book. We got the book published. I took the movie rights and wrote a film script about it, which somebody saw and said, "This could make a great Broadway musical." And so that's basically what I've been working on since about a year ago.
Thank you.
There you have it.
Thank you, Peter. Well, we just had a caller call through there to say hi. What was your name? Yeah, she's gone, but she just wanted to say that she really loved the show and the interview.
Oh, so well, that's very sweet. Well, whoever called, thank you so much.
Thanks. And
why'd you hang up?
So the name of the band?
It was called Focal Point.
Focal Point. This is such a curiosity in rock music history.
Well, you know, what's a curiosity is that somebody would be signed to Apple that you wouldn't even know about. Oh, she's calling back. But, you know, it's... Like, I almost, like, didn't believe it when I first heard it, but then I looked them up and talked to people from the Apple organization. Like, I know a guy who ran Apple, you know, his name is Jack Oliver, and he was the head of Apple Records. And I ran into Jack, and I said, "Do you know these guys?" He said, "Yeah." And then I looked them up in books and stuff, and, you know, it wasn't BS. It was a real story. And, you know, I got to be great friends with the guy, the main guy and everything. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, it's a cool story, and the play really works because it's kind of like a Cinderella. Like they get to the ball, and then Brian Epstein dies. I took some license with the story myself in terms of how I structured it, but it's really fun and it really works.
And the actual songs themselves?
Well, I can only use a few of them in the play because I'm using some of their music and I've written a bunch of others myself because they were kind of like a psychedelic kind of band, so it doesn't fit a stage play thing. But interesting. When Paul Tennant, the main guy, came to L.A., I got him on a show called Breakfast with the Beatles in Los Angeles. And that guy, the host of that show, a guy called Chris Carter, he knew all about them. He knew more about them than I did. Huh. And he said, oh, Focal Point, of course. I know all about them. I read about them in books. Huh. So, you know, yet nobody knows this story, which is kind of cool. Well, I guess they do now, but, you know.
Well, probably, I mean, Beatles aficionados, probably everyone knows it. But, like, for me, no idea. And
so you learn something every day.
Absolutely, man. Especially doing this show. And so we are speaking with Peter Foldy, his wealth of knowledge. And I got to say, just my own two cents as someone who loves music, but, you know, it's taken me a long time to start learning myself. So I got a guitar last year. And so the actual structure of songs and what songs really are is just sort of hitting me at a quick rate. And so I've been absorbing all this great music too, this older music than what I grew up with. And
it's a great way to, you know, like the older music has like really great structures, and there's a reason why kids of today really, relate to the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and the, you know, all those great bands that were just amazing, you know. And,
I played the Seeker. I learned the Seeker by the Who and played it at open mic last week and felt awesome. You know, it's like, and this little show is part of this effort to educate listeners about the whole expanse of musical history, and in one little facet, I guess, the Australian part of it, which I'm chipping away at slowly.
Yeah.
And Peter, as we mentioned before, has that connection through his...
Yeah, and there's lots of other Australian people you could talk to, you know, and people that you, you know, like may not have been aware of, you know, that are out there from an era before you were born, you know.
Yeah, you rattled off a few names on the bus that I'd never heard of. So we're going to get to those in the coming months. Thanks again, Peter. We have about 7 minutes.
Yeah, let's play this Carly, which is one of my favorite songs from the new album. And, you know, I just want to say thanks so much for having me on your show. It's been a lot of fun chatting with you. And it's nice to have somebody sort of, be interested in this stuff, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're out there and transmitting to others who are into it too. So let's get this song up playing. This is called Carly, and it is a song by Peter Foldy, brand new, yet to be played anywhere besides this show, I dare say.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Brand new music. Carly.
It's not fair, I won't be there standing beside you. You think I'm wasting your time, not towing the line. I always misguide you. Now you're sipping vino, or is it cappuccino, as you give your heart away. Always thought that we losing you like this is rather unexpected. Carly, can't you see I'm trying? 1 minute more, that's all I'm asking for. Carly, please don't leave me crying. Send me a message, girl, say that you'll be home tonight. Carly, you've made your move. You've got something to prove, and you think it's essential. Weren't you the one to declare you'd always be there? Now it's inconsequential. I'm staring out the window, sitting here in limbo, watching night turn into day. Suddenly I love you so.
result, and I know it's conclusive. The sounds of hallelujah are loud enough to fool you when you're lost in nowhere land. It hurts to think.
One last track there from Peter Foldy, a wonderful pop tunesmith from Los Angeles. And he's been speaking with us for the last hour and a half in the studio. It's been great. And I got to say, yeah, I don't know, like just your music, like in a cynical age, it helps to make me feel less cynical.
Oh, thank you.
You know, it's like, yeah, like people out there, you know.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's what I like to do. I'm not a complicated songwriter, or I'm not trying to be clever for the sake of being clever. I just like melodies and pop music and harmonies and stuff like that.
And it will always be needed, no matter what.
Yeah.
And so we've had a great chat today. If you missed some or most of this show, fear not. Go to Google, go to your web browser, ozstrandedradio.com. We'll have the podcast up in the next day or so. And we did another phone interview with Peter last year. So if you go to the search bar, so the first interview is there. Peter Foldy of Bondi Junction fame, the song that came out in 1973, which was a big hit in Canada. And he's never stopped recording. And those tracks we've heard over the last hour and a half, the handful there, are going to be available on a new record. And we'll definitely keep in touch with Peter, and who knows, maybe another time we'll have another chat
again
on the phone
or
whenever.
Yeah. I'll send you some of my Aussie mates to chat with you, and I just want to say thanks again for having me on and for your support. So it's been
a lot of fun,
and you have a great show here.
Thank you.
And there's a lot of Aussies here, I'm sure, that listen to you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And
I know my relatives in Sydney do, so.
And my mum and dad.
Yeah, there you go. Hi, Mum and Dad.
It's right. And, oh, my God, how can I forget? It is Australia Day. It's the 26th of January. Well, tomorrow, but over there now. So
can I just say Aussie, Aussie, oi, oi, oi?
I'll give you permission. Just one.
People hate that.
Anyway,
it's a whole other story.
That's okay. So it should be about 2 p.m. or 2:30 p.m., I think, in Sydney. So happy Australia Day. And so that pretty much wraps it up. We do have African Rhythms up next with David. So between now and then, here's a track I was going to play if we ran out of time, if we needed something. Neil Young. So I went to his show last year, and it's kind of cool because like when you bought your tickets online, they mailed out a free Neil Young CD, which was the one he put out last year, which was a whole bunch of folk standards that him and Crazy Horse bashed out in the studio. So we're going to hear Oh Susanna, cover by Neil Young and Crazy Horse, Wild. And so that'll probably get us through till when David walks through the door for African Rhythms. Here we go. Thanks for listening. This has been CITR Radio, and my name is Matt. Good night.
Susanna was coming down the hill. Oh, 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 Susanna, don't you cry for me, cause I come from Alabama with my B-A-N-J-O on my knee. Was in her mouth, the tear was in her eyes. Says I'm coming from the south, Susanna, don't you cry. Oh, oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me, cause I come from Alabama with the B-A-N-J-O on. To death.